Om Shanti. Today, the subject is Sati and Sakshi. Sati is the companion and Sakshi is the detached observer. So, our companion is Bap Dada. And what we are observing is the inner drama and the outer drama, because there are two dramas. One is the drama that's going on in our mind, in our feelings, the sanskaras, subconscious, all sorts of things that are not visible to the five senses, but the mind experiences these things. And then we have the outer drama, which is what we see through the five senses. And we have a way of talking about the real world as if it's real. Right? We say, we're going from Madhuban, we're going back to the real world. Right? And then this is also real. And I want to talk about this subject in terms of the game, because there is a game going on and we are playing a game, so we need to know about this game. And being a sati with Bap Dada as our sati, our companion, and the detached observer, these two positions are positions that we adopt vis-a-vis this game that's going on. And so when we become BKs, one of the things we're told is you are an actor and there is a thing called drama going on. And drama is a word from the Indian English of the 1930s that refers to film as opposed to theatre. And so when we're using the word drama, we're talking about 3D film that we are in and that we also watch. So our position in this game is we are in the middle of our drama. So each and every one of us, we have the picture of the cycle, the circle with the four ages, and you're in the middle of it. And your existence in the material world, in the dimensions of time and space, is something that is a 360 degree rotation around your own self. Yes? So whatever is in the drama is something that rotates around you. And in the process you take a maximum of 84 births. So if you take all of the 84 births, then you see all of the drama from your particular perspective. And then there is something called status. A lot of people have an illness called status anxiety. And in this world of the game, the stakes in this game are very high. It's a very high stakes game, and so we have a lot of concern about status. So we need to know what is status and what is our relationship with the concept of status and the reality of status. And this game is called victory and defeat, gaining and losing. It's also called the game of coming and going. It's the game of the rise and fall of civilization. It's the game of good and evil. All these things. Day and night. It's a game in which you go through from one extreme to the other. So sometimes we can think of it as a pendulum, just swinging away through eternity. And sometimes it's one side, and sometimes it's the other side. In its simplest form, we are going round and round and up and down for all time. And so, from the perspective of what I'm going to call normal consciousness, the consciousness of the people of the real world, this is a completely pointless thing. But from the perspective of spirituality, it is the point. And so we need to ask the question very deeply, the question, what is the point? What is the game? What am I? Who am I? What's going on? And these very basic questions of what am I? And what is mine? Baba has said that there's a key. And the key is my Baba. And putting the key in the lock before you turn the key is I, the soul. So there are three things. There's I, the soul. There's my Baba, and there's the game. And that's really all there is. So, what are the things that make the game a problem? One of them is role consciousness. Daddy Jenki the other day was talking about people who are role conscious. They're just rolling around all over the place. So there's no stability. Huh? Because we ask the question, if you were role conscious, you say, well, what is my role? You see? And in the real world, when you talk about films and you talk about roles that film actors get to play, they get a script and they see what character they have to play, and then they play that character and they get money for it. And so the public identifies that person with a role, and if a person gets caught up in their role, they are considered to be second-class actors. A good actor is immersed in their role, fully playing their role, but not caught up in the role. The moment an actor believes that they are the role, that's when the greatness stops and illusion, ego, problems, etc. begin. And I think it's quite a useful analogy for us, because it's very important for us to be detached from the costume we got and the activity that is performed through that and the experiences that are received by the soul through the body. I remember sometimes people saying to me, oh, the Chinese souls have come, and the English souls have come, and the German souls have come. And I say, what? There isn't anything like that. There's Chinese bodies, English bodies, German bodies, but souls don't have nationalities. Right? And one of the things that is a challenge for people is to find their identity. So there's these two questions. One is, what am I? The what question. And then there's, who am I? And they're very important questions, because I am a soul, there's a what, but a soul is not a thing. Bodies are objects. Souls are not objects. A soul is a someone. But when we ask ourselves the question, what am I? We have to begin with what am I, because the place where we start from is object consciousness. And we have to move from thinking of ourselves as objects that are really beings into some other thing, you see. So body consciousness is called false consciousness. Body consciousness is when I think I'm a thing. And things that move around by themselves, they're called beings. And things that don't move around by themselves, they're called things. Right? But actually, both of them are things. One of the things is animated by the soul, which is the body. And then another thing, like the chair, which doesn't have a soul, is not animated, but the body is an object and the chair is an object. So if we say, I am something that relates to our physical appearance or origin or anything like that, then that's called object consciousness or body consciousness, as well as the soul consciousness. And this is very connected with something that we call making generalizations. Object consciousness provokes generalizations. We say all the Indians are like this, and all the Australians are like that, and all the men are like this, and all the women are like that, and all the children are like something else. Generalizations is very much a product of object consciousness, in which we develop a vast collection of preconceptions. And these preconceptions about who we are and what we are and what all the other people are make it impossible or obstruct, very considerably obstruct, our ability to perceive what's really in front of us. And so the practice of being a detached observer is very much to help us to see what's exactly in front of us. In our object consciousness, our body consciousness, one of the things we do when we perceive anything going on in the drama is we say it's either good or it's bad. Or we can vary that a little bit. It's boring, it's interesting. It's worthwhile, it's not worthwhile. We have these evaluations because we have an intellect, and the intellect is supposed to do that. But I found it very interesting that Baba asked us at the very end of the last season, before this one, would you please stay away from good and bad? You see. And when he talks to us about the drama, he says, it is good. It's not bad. There isn't anything bad in the drama. We people have something called morality and ethics. And these two terms, morality comes from the Latin and ethics comes from the Greek, and they both mean the same thing. They mean something like conventional wisdom. That is to say, these are the ideas that have stood the test of time, that have been created by people over the course of a long period of time, the current era, say, over the last 2,500 years. And this is then the criteria by which we say something is good or bad. And there are variations, cultural variations and so on, but morality and ethics are considered by many people to be pretty much universal. And what we're saying, what we're seeing is that morality and ethics corresponds to something which Baba calls Paramat. Paramat. We have three mat. We have Srimat, we have Manmat, and we have Paramat. And so Paramat is also translated as the opinion of other people. So conventional wisdom, the morality and ethics, that is called Paramat. And then we have Manmat, which is your own ideas. And pretty much Manmat and Srimat, Manmat and Paramat are the same. Because when we get born, we are continuously subjected to these opinions and statements that come from conventional wisdom. And then we have our own conscience, which is an inner thing, and our conscience corresponds to a certain percentage to the Manmat Paramat. And then we have Srimat, which is something new. And Srimat comes from God, who is an extraterrestrial, right? He's not really a he or a she or an it, but we say he for convenience. Shiv Baba is different from human beings and has a very different take on this thing called drama. And it's his word for this thing. We call it reality, and he calls it drama. So the conventional wisdom, the ethics and morality is based on a concept that itself is a product of sense perception. Because what you see, what you hear, you know, the history and everything, it keeps on happening, and you develop a way of managing it in terms of you want to make a stable society. And in these ethics and morality setups, these are mostly described by the conventional religions and philosophies and constitutions of countries, this kind of thing, you see. So all of these things are man-made items. And it all comes from an intellect that is corrupt. And then you have Parma, Srimat, which comes from an intellect that is pure and unchanging. Shiv Baba, I mean, his one of his definitions is that he is immutable. That means he is not changing. He's not getting bigger or smaller or better or worse or older or younger or any of those things. He's absolutely stable, unmoving reference point. And he's called truth. You see? And the people who have figured out all of these things, conventional morality and religions and philosophies and constitutions and all of this, in spite of that, they're all looking for, consciously or unconsciously, to a greater or lesser extent, truth. Because the conventional ethics and morality and approach to reality is sometimes not clearly not right. And so it's a partial truth. And if something is true, then it's true, but it's not true if it's slightly untrue. The moment there's a slight amount of untruth in it, it goes into the department of untruth. So anywhere from slightly untrue to totally untrue is false. So all of these things that people have faith in are not solid. And we are at a time when all of that is also breaking down. And so what Shiv Baba tells us is there's a game going on. And the confluence age, the process of going from a breakdown of human civilization, total breakdown of human civilization to paradise or heaven, that is the game. So the whole cycle from heaven to hell is not the game, it's the result of the game. The game itself is the confluence age. And so here we are. As soon as we become a BK, we step onto the confluence age, which is superimposed on the Iron Age. And not just superimposed like a couple of sheets of paper, one on top of each other, but, you know, it's much more complicated in and out, you see. So, for example, Baba had said that Maharati, the elephant rider, because in this game there's different players. So you have the foot soldiers, the cavalry, and the elephant riders. And so it's not just only a game, it's a war. It has very high stakes. And the stakes are the kingdom of the world. The kingdom of the world is not happened in all of human history that someone became the ruler of the entire world, except in legends, you see. And so Shiv Baba says, okay, this game, very high stakes, and what you can get is the kingdom of the world, and what you lose, if you don't play it right, is the kingdom of the world. You see? So, very, very high stakes game. And so what we have to be, one part of playing this game, is sati and sakshi. That means we have to be the companion of God. And so when we use this key, my Baba, we put it in the game and we turn the key, and that putting it in the game is I'm a soul, sorry, and turning it is my Baba. And then you begin to play. See? So what makes us win and what makes us lose in this game? Because the winning and losing is taking place all the time, and you're moving in and out of the confluence age, in and out of being a Maharati, a cavalry and a foot soldier. We have the caste names, you know, the Brahmin. And so we're supposed to be Brahmins, very elevated Brahmins, jewels of the Brahmin clan. So as you become a player, you're a player as a Brahmin, you see. And a Brahmin is a person who is in Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya means celibacy, also means following in the footsteps of Brahma. And so Baba talks sometimes about when you are the companion of Baba, you are copying him, you are following in his footsteps, and you are referring to him to find out at any given moment what move to play in this game. And the reason why we have this is because Brahma Baba won the first place, you see. So that's already taken. And it was predestined. It's very interesting if you think about, there you are, you're just a Sindhi businessman, and then all of a sudden you're Brahma. And you're going to be Vishnu. You're going to be Krishna, historical person in this drama. And so you have to position yourself mentally, you know, about like, what is really real here? You see? So the real self is, I'm a soul, invisible, immortal, point of light, and my original elements, I use this term elements because we have the five elements of matter, air, earth, fire, water and ether, which go through their process of total pure to total impure, or the whole thing of entropy. And then from the spiritual side, you have the five elements of the soul, which I call as peace, power, love, bliss, and purity. Purity, peace, power, love, and bliss. PPPLB. It's easy to remember it like that. And then Baba said to us, your sanskaras are God's sanskaras, or God's sanskaras are to be claimed by you as your inheritance and made into your own. Yes? You remember that one? So if you say regarding any sanskaras that belong to the Copper Age, Iron Age, like that, and you say, these are my sanskaras, then you've kind of lost the plot, because those are aspects of your role at a time when it's degenerate, and then it's also described as aspects of Ravan, aspects of the non-truth, the false. And so anything which is non-true you cannot lay claim to it because it would be a crime. It's not yours. You see. So in terms of being a detached observer, in the inside of yourself you have some sanskara coming up. Right? Everybody has their sanskaras. And the kind of sanskaras that we're wanting to be free from are sanskaras that arise out of these five vices. Five vices: greed, anger, lust, attachment, ego. Right? So these five vices, they're also called as negative emotions, feelings. And say greed. How do you know if you are being greedy? Is when you want something that you don't need for you know, the things that are needed for a body is clothing and shelter and food and transportation, like this, some equipment for different activities and so on. So greed is when you have this feeling of desire, not because you need it. So if you need something, say you want to go out shopping. You want to go out shopping because, oh, we have to get milk. So you go with the idea, we have to get milk. And you reach in the shop and you see a few things that, ooh, that looks nice. That's good. So you have some impulse buying because of attraction. And then there's some things that you forgot you needed that you see, so you get those. They're also needed. And you may end up with a $50 can of milk. And there are shops in America, big shops, where you buy in bulk. And you can end up with a $500 piece of butter because of all the other things that you buy in big quantity, because they're cheap, but when you buy a lot of them, they're not cheap anymore. So you go deep into greed. You are attracted by something because of the soul forgetting itself and getting lost in the visual perception, so that the things that you see dictate your actions. And the sense of incompletion or lack is mixed with that. So those two things dictate that you do something out of greed. So this sense of lack is partly because the soul itself is depleted, energy is less. And of course, when we do anything out of any of these five negative emotions, we create karmic accounts. That means we go into debt. And so then that is another energy, an energy to go into further debt, to go further away from the sense of self that's internalized. So the practice of being Sakshi, there you are, soul is in the body, you go somewhere, say for example a shop, you observe what attracts you. You don't necessarily act on it. You observe what attracts you, and you observe where you are susceptible. In that way you know better about yourself. Oh, you're especially susceptible to shoes or whatever the thing is. You know, you already have 20 pairs of shoes and you still go, oh, that's very nice. Well, you have 21 or 22. You see. And why you're especially susceptible to shoes, there may be some symbolic reference or whatever, but you have a special attraction to certain types of things. You know, it may be pens, it may be who knows what, but you have your particular things that you can't do without, though you don't actually need them. So what we are trying to do here in the confluence age is we're trying to understand ourselves to the point where these different pulls that pull us away from ourselves are neutralized. And the reason why the pull is so strong is because of the emptiness, or that is to say, the soul is depleted. So Baba has explained to us that your soul is depleted because of you have passed through 5,000 years of time, and that will do it. Even if you do good actions, you'll still be depleted just because of passing through 5,000 years of time. And the energy of the soul gets depleted purely and simply by coming into the material body and performing action. But in addition to that, we also have done a few mistakes of different varieties. So part of what being Sakshi has to do with is for us to have a different relationship between whether something's good or bad. You see, because very often a person will say, I do bad things, or I did this or that or the other bad, or I am bad. You see? And when you see yourself doing something bad, you don't like it. And so you may hide it, or you may excuse it, or you may pretend that it was really very good and all the other people are nuts because they don't realize it's good, or something, you see, to make it seem right. And in this way we avoid the truth of that particular thing. So we have a long, long history of avoiding truth or of making untruth seem like truth because we are very image conscious. So one thing is role conscious, but then very connected with that role is that image, you see. My image means that you should think very well of me. You see. There's an expression that is very important in Japan. This cultural concept of losing face. You know? So if your reputation is negative for any reason, you lose face. Sometimes people will experience losing face if they get a grade in their exams which is not 100%. You see. Because image consciousness produces this feeling that if you're not number one, you're no good. And so if somebody has identified by the examiner as being number 47 out of 100, that's really bad. You see. And so when we take it personally, we identify with that and we say to ourselves that this particular person has written this particular number about my performance, and that becomes an excuse for suicide. You see. It shows you the extent to which we are under the influence, in terms of our feelings and our actions, of things that are outside, and in this particular case it'd be part of the paramat, you see. Because who says this particular exam is important? And who says that your performance in this particular exam proves this or that about your personality? Who says? You see. So it's an example of buying into a construct about a person's value that has absolutely nothing to do with the actual value of the being. You understand? And on one level, in our conscience, we know that all of that stuff doesn't have any meaning. But even knowing the effect of other people's facial expressions when they hear about it is so strong that it influences us. And then at that time, we are not a detached observer. We are under the influence, and that influence dictates our behavior and our feeling and our sense of self and so on. And so in this game we get tested on all the areas in which our vices, our negative emotions, our sense of self that is not our actual self, is influencing how we feel about ourselves and what we do. And so what Baba has said is, everything that takes place that you can see, that you can hear, that you can feel, all the things that you can perceive through your sense organs, all of it is good. Blanket good. You, because of so much long experience of the polarities of right and wrong, pleasant and unpleasant, tasty and untasty and whatnot, are very habituated to the positive-negative polarities. And when Baba says, come sit with me from my perspective in Paramdham and look at the material world at the same time you're the soul in the body and in the thing. But I'm the truth, and what I'm telling you is all of it is good. And you say, well, it doesn't feel very good, right? And why something doesn't feel good? And then he says, it is good. Whatever has happened is good. Whatever is happening now is good. And whatever is going to happen is very good, even better. You see? So he says to us, this is the truth. The truth is, it's all good. And you say, really? Okay. And then something happens that's bad, so-called, and you get caught in it. So that means in the game, a ball was thrown and you didn't catch it. You understand? A provocation comes, something happens to you which normally is experienced as bad. Someone irritates you, or they do something that's against your principles, or any kind of thing, you see, bad thing. Someone crashes into your car or whatever, anything that displeases you, you say it's bad. And because you are experiencing that thing not as a detached observer but attached, So something that happens to any of your possessions happens to you because you say, this is mine. You say, this is my car, and so if it gets crashed, I get upset. If somebody else's car gets crashed, I don't get upset. I say, oh, terribly sorry. You see, why I get upset? Because my image, because the money, you know, I'm going to have less money because I have to make it fixed, you know. Or, my God, you know, it's going to hurt, you know, like it's a child or something. And even, you know, a human being, my person, something bad happens to my person, it happens to me because we are taking our sense of goodness from that thing being a certain way for us. And so what Baba is saying, be a detached observer, strip yourself of everything. Nothing is mine. It's very difficult to do that because things keep coming. This is coming, that is coming, all sorts of extra things are coming. Some people, they don't have that. They don't have lots and lots of things coming to them. But I think most of us, I think if you're a Brahmin, you've done lots of good karma, and so lots of good things happen to you, so lots of nice things keep coming. And then you become attached to those things, you see. You get a nice house, okay, it's just a house, but then after some time, you know, you get kind of into it and you start doing things to it, and pretty soon you're attached, you see. And so we have to try all kinds of ways to strip ourselves of property and position and possessions and people that we start getting attached to. Because it happens within a few days, you know. And the game is to again and again and again take each and every situation that comes, even if it's a very slight situation, like you feel positively inclined towards someone because they're nice. The inclination over to there is actually not a bad thing, but you're inclined away from Baba. And so when you're inclined away from Baba, the amount of sakshipan, or detached observer, is slightly reduced. And there's a little bit of a dependency on that material thing. And so the game is going to, at some point, throw up a ball where something happens to that thing. Or something happens to your relationship with that thing. Something goes wrong. Small thing. And when something goes wrong, it's the exam of a second. Can you let go in a second? And that's the winning point, you see. A game come, the ball is thrown, or the situation comes, and the test is let go in a second. And it comes in a million different ways. It could be that you say something to that person that hurts their feelings because you were just not totally present and you were careless. And then your nice relationship is messed up. Carelessness. Baba talked about the carelessness, the excuses. Oh, well, you shouldn't be so sensitive, you know. excuse. The reality is, I was careless, and my even tone of voice could be off. It could be as small as that. You make some innocent mistake, but why? Because of being inattentive, you see. And so, in Dadi Jenki's expressions, when something like that happens, the expression is, your yoga wasn't right, isn't it? Your yoga wasn't right. And so your yoga wasn't right means you were disconnected from Baba and then pulled into the influence of the chaos of the material world. It's in a chaotic state right now. And so then you lose a point. And so where you could have won a point, where you could have been together with Baba at all times and winning point after point after point and being in a state of great joy and great bliss because you are really, really free. And every time you have to interact with the earth and all the things that's going on in it, which is 24 hours a day, you do it right, you see. When you're the companion of God and the detached observer, so that you, as an instrument, you come into the scene, you play the scene well, because you're very alert, very attentive, you can feel all the innuendos and your intuition is very fine, you know exactly what to do, you complete the action and you go into a moment of stillness and connection with Baba. And then another thing will come. So what Baba has been telling us is, in between, take time, 5 minutes, 1 minute in the soul world, 1 minute in the subtle regions, 1 minute doing world service. So keeping the self close to Baba and the detached observer, and the nature of the game is at any second you may die. You may die. When the family is large, you see people are dying all the time because that's what happens in any population. And so we have the immediate experience of Dada Vishwaratan. And the interesting thing for us is that when people die, when they leave their bodies, we go and see them afterwards. You see, because, okay, the person dies, so they come out of their body and they are in their subtle body, which is quite comfortable. And their body is in the morgue or on some ice or whatever it is. And you have all nice rituals and powders and sheets and you're carried and flowers and all of these nice things. And there's the expression of love that goes with the body. And then you go off to the crematorium. All the flowers are pulled off and all the sheets are pulled off. And you quickly put into all the logs and butter and all the cooking and put the fire and very quickly, Om Shanti, that's it. Gone. And on to the next thing. And you come back home, take a bath, wash everything, wash your hair, wash your shoes, everything, and off a Borg, you see. And you have a Sandeshi who goes up to the subtle regions and there they are, you see. And what did Dada say? He said, oh, well, Baba said, be ever ready. So the moment came and I took a jump, you see. And so he won. Just like that. a second, you see. And then Baba spoke to us about you've got to have a long period of practice. And so all the things in the drama, whether they're good or bad, doesn't really matter, because the reason these things are there is in order for us to understand ourselves. Where am I susceptible? Where is it easy for me to let go? Where is it difficult? What are the various different types of manifestations of each of the five vices in me? You see, at the level of thought, at the level of words, at the level of action, at the level of feeling, at the level of imagination, waste thoughts. How do we get a waste thought? The mind, one of the things it does is it makes associations very quickly. And so we're in the game, close to Baba, being a detached observer, and we see something which reminds us of 100 different things, very fast. Right? And then all of a sudden you're not the detached observer anymore. And you've gone into some memory of something which upset you 15 years ago, and you're right back into it. And the waste thoughts is where you indulge in that thought. And actually gradually putting yourself into a bad mood or resentment or something like this because you didn't notice, or when you noticed you didn't let go and say, "Oh, waste thought, thank you very much, goodbye, see you later, I'm not out of here," you know, and you zip back to your stage of being the companion of Baba and the detached observer. And this is the game. And what we want to do is we want to be good at the game. And it's full of temptations, you see, about what is really real. And so you may say, well, the most important and real thing is to be a centra nivasi. Right? No. That's not what you be, that's a role you play. So if you think the most important thing to be is a centra nivasi, there's role consciousness. And then if you think that it's real, sooner or later there will be a deception because it isn't real. And so the moment of deception is the moment where something comes in the game to disturb your comfort and conviction that this thing is real. And so at that moment you have to let go of the idea that it's real, because you have to get the point really fast that, hey, wait a minute, I thought this was real, it's not real, it's only a role. And then you go back to your drawing board, okay, what is really, really real? Then you say, okay, what's real is to become a dot. Right? That's real. Become a dot. Okay. I'm a dot. 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 But you're still object conscious. I see. And again, there'll be a deception that you're not a dot, like a piece of ink on a piece of paper, not that kind of dot, you see. Because that would be avoidance of the real dot. You see, because when you think dot, you don't think a being, you think some mark that's made on some physical surface, dot. Or you say, you know, it's a Shiv Baba's over there. Not. Shiv Baba is represented by this red round thing. whole thing. But you get used to associating it with Shiv Baba, and then if anyone insults it or doesn't get it right, I remember someone came to the center when we were in San Francisco and said, "Oh, that's the Brahma Kumari's fire alarm." And I really thought that. How can you say that? Because you get attached even to your symbol of Shiv Baba. How can they possibly imagine the symbol of God, you know what I mean? Very difficult. So it's very subtle. I've gone past the time. Look, we have to stop because we have a meditation. So let's think about these things and think about the stage of being the detached observer and companion of God. And all these things in drama are not me, and they're not good, bad or indifferent. They're just there, neutral. Om Shanti. I turn myself within. With the sense that nothing that I can see or touch or hear permanent. It comes, it's there for a while, then it goes. Because it's impermanent, we say, it's not real. So what is real? I exist. That is real. My essential nature, pure, peaceful, loving. My Baba exists in a state of bliss. And I have to get to that same condition. Where I'm so connected with myself that I know, I experience reality, that I'm pure, peaceful, loving, very powerful. And so I'm free. Whatever is going on in the world, I'm still pure, peaceful, loveful, and I have the power to remain so. The power to put a stop when the mind wanders off. And being able to exercise that power to my satisfaction is what makes me free. Then I can exist in bliss. This is what it feels like to be real. So the way is to put everything into Baba's hands. As each thing comes onto your plate of things to be done, offer it to Baba. Baba, this is yours. Every time you refer to Baba, you receive a treasure. Something comes to you that you have to take care of, and you say, Baba, this is yours. Your worry and anxiety disappears. You are free. You realize you haven't done anything. You can't do anything. You don't have to do anything. All sorts of things are going on. So many actions are occurring in the drama. Allow yourself to watch it from the balcony of Baba. With that distance, you see the big picture. Most of the actions are actually reactions. Karmic accounts getting made and paid. It's a game. You watch it with distance. You begin to see that it all equalizes. And that's the nature of the game. It all has a tendency to equalize. I, the soul, don't need to get involved. Being close to Baba and being aware of the function of instrument from time to time, the signal comes, go, do something, come back. The soul connects with the material world, with the drama, people. Does something very good. And the scene completes. You return to the companion. From the companion, you draw power. You draw peace, purity, love. You live in bliss. There's no impulse from emptiness, and so no karma. Requires payment. Enjoy being with the one so rich, so interesting. So sustaining. In comparison with this one, all the others are very fine, but not a temptation. There's no substitute. for this one. So as you move around the world, move with him. And when the signal comes, do something and return. This is the life of the companion, the observer. Om Shanti.